Hello and welcome to the No Ceilings NBA Draft Show. Today is a deep dives episode. I'm your host, Nick Agar Johnson, and I'm here as always with my co-host, Paige Otto. Paige, how are you doing this fine afternoon?
I'm doing great. You know, it's hump day, halfway through the week. Can't complain. And I'm excited to talk hoops with you, Nick.
Yeah, a little bit of housekeeping. This episode we are recording on Wednesday as opposed to releasing on Wednesday because one of us had an internet outage at our home. Not to name names, but it was me. Anyway, but you know, we did what we could. We readjusted. We're, you know, recording a little bit late, but we'll get it out there today for all of you. And we're going to do our new typical deep dives format. So we're covering two prospects today. And unlike the previous three episodes, we've actually picked players who play the same position, which we haven't done yet. So today we're doing two guards and we're actually doing two undersized point guards. And the funny part to me is that we're covering two undersized point guards. That's about where the comparisons to their games end, is just, hey, they're point guards and they're small. But we're starting today with the player I picked, John Mobley Jr., Jedi Mobley of Ohio State. And the case for Jedi Mobley, honestly, on both sides, is pretty simple to make. He's one of the best shooters in college basketball, and he's not just, you know, an off-ball catch-and-shoot type. He's, you know, creating his own looks off the dribble. He can space from, you know, well deep. He's got parking lot range. And you know, the flip side is he's a 6'1 guard who, not only is he a 6'1 guard, he's a 6'1 guard who isn't, you know, this crazy point of attack event causer type. So given that this is my player and I've, you know, given a little bit of the rundown, Paige, I'm curious for your thoughts. Where are you at on Jedi Mobley?
Yeah, I think I agree with everything you say. He's a lethal shooter, definitely has legit NBA range. The one question I have with him is, you know, what else can he do? When he's forced off the perimeter, you know, obviously very small sample size. Ohio State has only played three games this season, but his playmaking has definitely improved in a sense from last year, and his ability to get to the rim as well. We already know he shot like 38% from 3-point range, but his free throw percentage, he shot 88% last year and over 90% this year. I mean, there's no question when you look at him that he can shoot the lights out of the ball, right? But he's not very heavy in the pick and roll either. Obviously, you know, that he plays with Bruce Thornton, which I got to see him about 2 years ago when Ohio State played Michigan at Chrysler Center. And Bruce is very dominant on ball, one guard, obviously. They're not going to have Junie, you know, run the point of attack that much with Bruce there. But I think with Mobley, the best thing about him is that he is so confident in everything he does. And that is so prevalent in all of his game. Obviously, you know, the playmaking isn't where we want it to be. His at-rim finishing certainly isn't where we want it to be either. But even when he is in the pick and roll, he knows how to manipulate his defenders. I love him off DHOs. I think he's great there. It's just a matter of, you know, he's always going to be a shoot first kind of guy, score first kind of guy. But how can he, you know, playmate for his teammates, set up his teammates? Because he's playing with, you know, the likes of Bruce Thornton, a lot of other great offensive players while at Ohio State. I love Devin Royal too. I think he's a great player for them, and I think he's going to break out a little bit. Obviously the first game of the season people thought Ohio State was going to blow out IU Indianapolis campus, but you know,
not quite.
Yeah, not quite, but you know, it's first game of the season, got to get a little rust off. But I think too with him, a lot of people, you know, last year he was talked a little bit about, but definitely, you know, when you take, you know, what other things can he be great at? He's elite shooter. But this year is definitely what can he show front offices and scouts that he can be efficient, you know, in the pick and roll, off ball. Can he, you know, be better at the rim, you know, get that up to at least 60%. I would like to see. I think last year he was only about 50 or 48% or so. But I really like him as a prospect. It's just going to be hard with any undersized point guard to make a real make some real noise, especially in draft conversations.
Yeah, you brought up the at rim stuff, and that's really the most important part for me. You know, something that we find a way to talk about pretty early on in every single one of our episodes is it's less and less common for players who only have one really elite skill to make it in the NBA and to stick around in the NBA. And honestly, the odds tend to be better for players who are pretty good at three or four things rather than, you know, elite guys at one thing. The thing is, if you're as good of a shooter as Chennai Mowgli is, that's really the one skill that you can kind of fudge it. Like, you can be a 1.5 skill player if you're that good of a shooter. Now, part of that is, first of all, it's a lot easier to be 1.5 skill player if you're 6'7", 6'8", as opposed to being 6'1". But the most important part in my mind, which is what you already brought up, is the at rim stuff. And the finishing numbers, not great, as you brought up. I mean, 49% around the rim is not going to get it done. But it's not just that he's not the best finisher. It's also, I mean, last year he was, so this is per synergy, last year he was in the 6th percentile in terms of frequency of at rim finishes. And, you know, that's almost more concerning than the low numbers because, you know, as you mentioned, he's like an almost 90% free throw shooter. If he can get to the line with a decent amount of frequency, then, you know, finishing, I mean, you want him to finish better than 49%, right? But like, if he gets from bad at the rim to, you know, below average, right? Like if he gets to, you know, 52, 53, but he's getting to the line a decent amount and he's, you know, taking those attempts and he's opening up defenses by attacking the rim, that's going to be a big part of the puzzle because, you know, we touched on some of the defense stuff already, but like, it's an uphill climb for players his size, period. It's more of an uphill climb when you're not like, I always lean on Kings examples because there's the NBA team that I watch the most, but there's a big difference between a Davion Mitchell and a Lou Williams, right? And Chan Mobley is much closer to Lou Williams than he is to Davion Mitchell, which makes it all the more important that basically every part of the offensive game has to be flawless. And I'm really glad you brought up the point about his playmaking because he's been trying more ambitious things in the early part of the season for Ohio State. And early results have been good, in my opinion, anyway. I mean, you know, he's had a few more turnovers, but again, that's what you expect when you're trying things more. And there's only so much you're going to have the ball in your hands when you're playing alongside Bruce Thornton. So that's, you know, part of it, as you already brought up. But really, for me, it's just he's got to get better at the at-rim stuff because everything else works. I mean, he's got a really good runner. You know, he's not elite, but he's good, you know, shooting off the dribble. He's, again, he is an elite catch-and-shoot guy. I mean, 87th percentile. And that's very helpful when you're a point guard-sized player who, you know, I'm more confident, I think, in his, you know, just purely point guard abilities than you are. But even still, he does need to be exemplary at that. And it's good that he's trying more things early this year. And some of them haven't worked, but, you know, more of them have worked than not. So that's an encouraging sign. But again, I mean, the offensive profile has to be pretty spotless for it to work for him. And, you know, we're seeing with Rob Dillingham, we're seeing with Reed Sheppard that, you know, I mean, Reed is a different calculus because he's a much better defender, even though he hasn't looked quite as good at the NBA level as he looked in college. But even still, he has that to lean on in a way that Chennai Mowgli doesn't. I guess the reason that I picked Chennai Mowgli more than anything else is he's such a spectacular shooter that it's hard for me to think that it won't work out at all. But I have to admit that normally guards that I'm interested in as draft prospects, they have to at least have some degree of rim finishing for me to really buy in. I mean, this is a different conversation, but the reason that I was more skeptical, I can speak English. The reason I was more skeptical of Jabari Smith Jr. than many was his at rim finishing numbers were really bad. And in his first couple of years, and you know, he's turned it around, obviously, and nobody ever doubted the defense with him. But, you know, when his shot wasn't going in his first year and a half in the NBA, it looked rough on offense. And that's a 6'10 big man, right? It's a different math entirely when you're talking about a guy who, at the very least, you'll want to have the ball in his hands a decent chunk of the time. You know, whether he's a pure point guard or a combo guard is up for debate, but he'll need to be really good at all of the combo guard stuff for it to work because he's always going to be giving up points on defense.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm glad you brought up Reed Sheppard because obviously his production on the offensive end hasn't been up to, you know, standards that we kind of thought it would be in his second year. But the reason why he's getting minutes on the court too is because his defense makes up for it. So with, you know, John Mobley Jr., he doesn't have that to lean on. So what other, you know, if his shot isn't falling, you know, how else is he going to make an impact on the court, right? We kind of know him in this microwave score kind of role, 1-2 guard role. But I think with him, you know, we know he's a great isolation scorer. You know, he was the 91st percentile, 95th percentile in spot up possessions. It's not a problem that, you know, he does have that shiftiness and wiggle to him, kind of like Rob Dillingham that I really like. In terms of, you know, he can
definitely. I thought I was remembering correctly that you were a Dillingham guy.
And he kind of reminds me in that sense, and just like how he, when he has a ball in his hands, just his movement patterns. And like, I love him off movement too. I don't think he has any trouble, you know, relocating, you know, getting into best position to, you know, find his shot. That's not an issue. But, you know, he also had zero dunks last year too, which is a problem in its own right. And also when he's, you know, shooting less than, you know, 50% from the rim is pretty concerning. With Rob, obviously he had more than, you know, zero dunks. So he was a lot more explosive. But yeah. I think when you look at him, he is explosive with the ball in his own way, not just like with that burst, you know, when you're looking at Rob Dillingham and his, you know, finishing numbers and, you know, how he is more, you know, body resilient, if you want to call it that, you know, how he gets to the rim and can manipulate defenders while he's finishing. That's something he definitely still needs to work on. And, you know, with him too, I think when you look at in terms of like raising his draft stock, I really need him to improve his pick and roll usage. Because if he's not going to, you know, attack the rim well, but he's also going to get to the free throw line, he has to make up in that sense for me to be, you know, a type of point guard I'd be confident in at the NBA level. And just his pick and roll numbers real quick. He was in the 28th percentile, only 13 possessions this year, obviously a small sample size, 56th percentile, 103 possessions last year, shot 39% out of the pick and roll as a ball handler. That definitely needs to, you know, be brought up. And obviously we're going to talk about Donovan Dent, which that's no issue for him. They're complete opposite in that sense. But I think the two big things for me in terms of me really, you know, locking in on him as a, you know, a guy I can trust in that role, especially with him being undersized, is, you know, more pick and roll efficiency, at the rim efficiency, and, you know, just showing me a little bit more on the defensive end of the ball.
Yeah. So the defensive end stuff, I mean, it's important. I'm less worried about it is not the right way of putting it. I'm more just sort of surrendering on that aspect of it, which is not the right way of putting it, but it's, you know, the idea being, given that he's not this crazy on ball guy like Reed Sheppard was, it's just hard for me to see an outcome where he ends up being a defensive contributor. Like, you know, maybe he gets to the point where this is something that I think about a lot with these kind of, you know, on ball types, is there's a big difference between below average and bad. And I think a lot of that is just effort, honestly. And so with Mobley, I think he can get to the below average point, but it's a whole lot of hope to think that he's going to get to the point where he's a, you know, plus defender given his size. So I'm more sort of drilling in again on the offensive side stuff. And you brought up a couple of really key points, which I want to circle back to. The biggest one being, you know, talking about his movement, shooting. And this is something that is kind of difficult to articulate, but I think that the conversation around shooting tends to be too general. And this is something that we've talked about in the past, but, you know, the idea of, and these are names that I bring up all the time because they're my go-to examples for this, but like Troy Daniels and Ryan Anderson were really, really good shooters. But Ryan Anderson in particular, he's not shooting off movement, right? He's long since retired, but, you know, the concept of that, you know, there's a big, big difference between, okay, I can kick the ball out to the wing, and if you're between 23 and 25 feet away and you catch the ball, you know, right at chest level, then we can be hopeful that you're going to make a good shot. And if you have to do any kind of running around screens, if you have to do any kind of dribbling, any of that. And so, you know, when we're talking about shooting with Jhené Mobley, again, it's all of the elements of shooting, right? And this is something that I talked about last year with Peyton Sanford. And even with Sanford, he was not someone who was as comfortable off the dribble as Mobley. And, you know, a huge part of why Mobley can be as effective on offense as he is because his handle is so good and because he's got that fluidity of all kinds of shooting. You know, as you mentioned, 95th percentile as a spot up guy. You know, he's someone who runs around screens with, you know, good frequency. He's someone who can shoot trail threes in transition, right? He's someone who, it's not just, oh, he's a good shooter because he's shooting, you know, 38% for 3-point range. It's the combination of all of it, right? It's the high volume 3-point shooting. It's the various different kinds of shots that he's taking. It's the fact that, you know, something that is a problem for on-ball guys that's less of a problem for off-ball guys is he's got that mid-range game too. And, you know, this is something that many, many years ago at this point, I talked about with both Tyler Metcalf and Tyler Rucker when in terms of Jaden Ivey, of that was a concern I had of if he gets forced off the 3-point line and he can't quite get all the way to the rim, what does he do? That's not a Janai Mobley problem, right? The problems with him are, you know, and we've covered them in pretty significant detail at this point, but the problems are the at-rim stuff and the pick and roll running. And given how much more he's shown as a passer this year, even with the relatively limited pick and roll reps, that's something that appears to be trending in the right direction. The at-rim finishing is not. And again, tiny sample size, we're 3 games into the season, right? But, you know, this is why I think I'm the high person in the No Ceilings crew on Boogie Fland, is maybe I'm more willing to excuse that than some when it comes to these guards who can create a ton of things for others, right? It was more of a concern for me with Jabari Smith Jr. because, hey, this is a big, right? If he's around the rim, he should be able to finish better than like 45% or whatever his college finishing numbers were. They weren't great. But the flip side of that is Jabari Smith Jr. has always been an excellent defender who's incredibly switchable, mobile, 6'10 dude. So like he had that to fall back on. With Mobley, it's like, it's not just that he has to get the pick and roll stuff better, and he also has to finish. It's that he has to do both, right? It's that he can't really pick one or the other because, and this gets back to the defensive side of things, you know, the best hope for him is that he reaches the below average defender level. And I think he can get there. I mean, you know, he moves pretty well. He has decent awareness of where he's supposed to be, but he's just not someone who, again, you know, if you're a Davion Mitchell, right, then you can make up for height mismatches by being just this relentless on-ball defender. And Janai Mobley doesn't have that. So because of that, the offensive stuff has to be pretty much perfect. And the areas that we've pointed out, I mean, I'm more concerned about the at-rim stuff just because I think his ultimate NBA role would be, as you mentioned, that microwave guy off the bench where it's important to make, you know, the primary reads and the secondary reads. Being the crazy playmaker isn't quite as big of a deal, but the at-rim finishing stuff is what really gets me because, again, as you mentioned, what is he going to do if he's forced off the 3-point line? And if the answer is, you know, off the dribble mid-range shot, just because I'm more comfortable with his game in that area than some guards doesn't mean that I'm comfortable enough in saying, yeah, I'm pretty confident that an NBA team is just going to let Janai Mobley put up whatever shots he wants, right? That's not the level of rule we're talking about unless he turns from, you know, elite shooter on a ton of attempts per game to like, you know, 43% on like, you know, Steph Curry volume, right? Like you have to, the bar is going to be so high for him to be more than an off the bench microwave scorer. And so if he is that type, again, I'm not as worried about the pick and roll stuff, but the at-rim finishing is a problem. And it's a problem for Boogie too, but maybe I'm just not as concerned about it as I should be, which is why I'm higher on both of these guys than much of the No Ceilings crew.
Yeah. And with him too, I think when you look at, you know, we've talked about basically all of his aspects of his game pretty in depth already, but, you know, his steal rate is only like 1.32.
Yeah.
And like for an undersized guard, you want that to be significantly higher. I would like to see at least like one or two steals, you know, per like 3 games at least, like to as a good starting point, because he is quick. He is a good athlete. He is bursty and has that shiftiness to him that, you know, if you're an undersized guard and, you know, your main skill is, you know, your elite shooter, that's definitely a quality trait that kind of goes hand in hand with that. Just because of, you know, the awareness and mindset that he and confidence with that too. But since he isn't really looking for that and he's not, you know, looking to get steals, he's looking to shoot and to get out. And I will say, like, the first game, the first couple games of the season, he did have some really good looks of setting up his teammates in transition that I did like. And he had a really great pass to Bruce under the basket with one hand, which I thought was a good read that I didn't really see a lot from him last year. So it looks like he is trying to improve that and show off his playmaking vision. But the steal rate is also a concern of mine too, just because, you know, that's another inch of his game that, you know, is kind of a con, right? So I think, you know, if he continues to improve that, his pick and roll usage, obviously his at the rim finishing is like my most concern trait of his. I think we're going to see a lot more people talk about him as the year goes on. But definitely the next game, you know, the first three games of the season were basically cupcakes, right? But they play Notre Dame on Sunday. So I think that that will obviously be like the first test for him too this year.
All right, shall we move on to Donovan Dent?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so your pick for this week was UCLA's Donovan Dent, formerly New Mexico's Donovan Dent. And yeah, I mean, it's funny because, again, this is the first time we've picked players who play the same position, and yet the case for both of them is radically different. So what led you to Donovan Dent for this week's episode?
Yeah, so about 2 or 3 years ago, I had the chance to watch Donovan Dent and Jerry McCain. And for those that don't know, they played on the same high school team out of California at Centennial. It was at one of the holiday classic tournaments. I forget. It was in 2022, I believe. Yeah. He was by far the best player on the court. I mean, everyone in the gym was talking about him at a high school level, his leadership skills, the confidence he had, the poise and calmness he displayed was such apparent even as a high schooler. And that's only translated more to the college level. He was the 2025 Mountain West Player of the Year. Arguably the best playmaker in the country. I definitely think he is the best orchestrator. Obviously with this year at UCLA, he's going to be more in the national spotlight and has a lot more better offensive players to play around him. Obviously Trent Perry, Sky Clark, huge backcourt for him. Obviously he's taken the reins for Mick Cronin. But with him, you know, he also is an undersized guard. He is about 10 pounds less than John Mobley. He's 6'2", 175. On film, he doesn't look 6'2". I think he's a little bit shorter, but he definitely makes up for it in his play. So with him, kind of the opposite as Mobley, he's a huge pick and roll guy. About 50% of his possessions are in the pick and roll. With him, it's another, you know, complete opposite. His shot is a huge question. He only shot, let me see here. I'm just going to read off some numbers. Last year he shot 40% from three on only 1.9 attempts per game. Off twos, 50%. Assists 6.4 with 1.4 steals. Last year was his highest points per game per season with 20.4. Started all 35 games, played 35 minutes per game. And then this year, you know, all those numbers, obviously it's a short sample size. We're only two games into the season, but he's averaging 16.5 points per game, 6.5 assists on 44, 25, and 77 shooting splits. Not the greatest start to the season in terms of his shooting for Dent, with shooting 25% and only attempting about 8 attempts. And most of those are off the catch, right? Which those he needs to be able to knock down. And his shot kind of looks like a last resort for him. He seems rushed. He is not a shot first type of guard. He's a playmake for others type of guard first. And with him too, his at the rim numbers are far better than Mobley. And I think he does a really great job of knowing what he is good at and amplifying that to the best of his ability. I'm confident when he goes to the rim, he's good at controlling his body, manipulating defenders at the rim, and also playmaking for others out of that. He had multiple double-digit assist games last year. This season, he had one with 9 assists. I think with him, his size is, you know, just a con in terms of, you know, when you talk about him. But we've been talking about him for, you know, the past 3 years that he is a legit, you know, NBA talent. And I think he does so many things well and has so many aspects of his game that I think will translate to the NBA level. It's just that his shot just needs to get there in any type of way it can. Because 25%, I know it's only through 3 games this year, and obviously his 3 years at New Mexico didn't show any, you know, true consistent shooting ability. He had some flashes here and there. I don't think his shot is bad by any means. But with him, if he's going to be, you know, your lead one guard, he has to be able to, you know, at least be a threat off the ball, which he is not. And the reason he was so wide open in his attempts in the 3 games this year is because obviously people know the scout, they're going to leave you open, but he has to capitalize on them. And he's not doing that. So, and the same thing with last year, he wasn't really doing that either, but his at the rim numbers were pretty impressive. And he also had at least one dunk on the season. He had 11 dunks on the season. I do think, you know, he's not the shiftiest guy, he's not the burstiest guy, but he's a very, very smart player. And I think that goes a long way in terms of, you know, him being 6'2", you know, he's a little bit on the lighter side for a point guard in this day and age, but his ability to manipulate the pick and roll, you know, be his patience is something that I think can't be taught in terms of, you know, these younger guys. He's going to be almost 23 years old on draft night. So a little bit on the older side, but he plays like a veteran, you know, day in and day out. And he's been playing like that since his freshman year.
Yeah, the shooting stuff is very interesting for a couple of reasons. So the 41% that he shot last year falls very squarely in the bucket of what I have called in the past the Derek Williams principle of some players who are not shooters can, if the sample size is small enough, look like really, really good shooters. The flip side is, you know, as you mentioned, the shot looks fine, but I think more, you know, this goes back into one of my other sort of things that I lean on of, you know, he's a 78% free throw shooter 78% last year, 77% this year, but that's, you know, he got to the line 6.5 times a game last year. And it's hard to understate how huge that is for a guard of his archetype to just be that consistently relentless in terms of the rim pressure of, like, you know, again, it's part of the deal with Mobley of, yeah, okay, you shoot 88-90%, but if you're only shooting 2 a game, that's not quite as helpful. I mean, you mentioned the wide open thing, right? Like, yeah, that's the scout. And, you know, going back to my Kings bag for a minute, the year that Rajon Rondo was a member of the Sacramento Kings, he shot 37% from 3-point range. And there were some people who were like, oh, is Rajon Rondo turning into a shooter? No, he was left wide open 2 times a game. And he would take those 2 shots. And some nights he would hit one of those 2 shots and other nights he wouldn't. And by the end of the year, it's like, okay, 37% on the most wide open attempts possible really doesn't say anywhere near as much. Like if Dent had, and, you know, again, under 2 threes a game is not the tiniest sample size. Like when we were talking about Alex Condon and Magoon Gwak, both of them shot fewer threes. The flip side is, of course, they're both bigs, right? So there's a different threshold that you have to hit when you're an on-ball point guard. And, you know, again, it's funny that these are the two guards that we've paired today because the holes are almost exactly the opposite, even though, you know, they're playing the same position in theory. There are 4 synergy numbers that I want to read off here because I think they tell the story pretty succinctly. Last year, let's go with 6 so we can get the full picture. Last year, Donovan Dent was in the 31st percentile as a jump shooter. So, you know, not great, not terrible, but, you know, significantly below average, right? Catch and shoot, he ranked in the 99th percentile. Catch and shoot frequency, he ranked in the 1st percentile. Off the dribble jumpers, he ranked in the 25th percentile in terms of efficiency. In terms of frequency, 98th percentile. That tells me a whole lot of what I need to know of, okay, so, you know, he can shoot, you know, especially when he's left wide open, his unguarded percentage on catch and shoots, tiny sample size, but 96th percentile. It's, you know, okay that, you know, the shot is improving. The shot is coming along. That's a good thing. And it's a lot easier to see that in the free throw numbers, where he was a, you know, high 60s free throw shooter his first couple of years at New Mexico, high 70s the last couple of seasons. But, you know, again, it's the kind of thing where having that off the dribble jumper is vital for a point guard in the modern NBA. But you just, the frequency from 3-point range just has to go up. And, you know, he's taken 4 so far in the young season, despite the fact that he, you know, has averaging 12, he's taken 25 shots on the year, and 4 of them have been from 3-point range. The diet needs to shift a little bit, but I don't know. I mean, certainly in terms of the playmaking stuff, he's incredibly advanced. And, you know, that's something that you would expect to continue and has so far continued. But again, with the shooting stuff, it's like, I think he's both a better and a worse shooter than the numbers would say. And that makes absolutely no sense. But to clarify what I was attempting to say there, it's like some of the stuff that he does, particularly from a standstill, is, you know, he's good at the standstill threes. And it's important that he can take the off the dribble jumpers and, you know, hit those sometimes. But with this is, you know, this is one of the toughest calculuses there is in my mind in terms of prospect evaluation, is how much of what this guy does at the pre-NBA level is going to be asked from him at the next level. And especially with, you know, point guard initiator types, you know, whatever size they may be, whatever defensive position they might play, initiator types. It's like, okay, if you're really good at getting yourself open for, you know, mid-range jumpers off the dribble that are entirely self-created, you know, NBA teams are not asking players outside of their superstars to create shots for themselves in the mid-range. So it's like, you know, that's a helpful skill to have when you're forced into a situation. You know, it's the conversation we had with Mobley, but in reverse, right? It's like, if a team is leaving you wide open at the three-point line, what are you doing? And, you know, with Dent, a lot of that is just going to have to be increasing the volume, right? And it's like, I would feel much better about his shot going forward if the end of the year number was 32% from 3-point range on 4 attempts per game, rather than what it was last year, which was 41% on less than 2 attempts per game, right? Like, that's sort of, you know, he needs to show, and it's funny because you mentioned the confidence thing, you know, certainly that never has appeared to be an issue for him, but the shooting frequency is something where, I mean, look, he's really, really good inside the arc, and that's going to be presumably where he does the majority of his scoring at the NBA level as well. But, you know, again, it's a matter of how teams are going to defend him. And as you mentioned, they knew the scout. They left him wide open and he didn't make them pay for it. And he's going to need to if he's going to be able to let the rest of his game sink.
Yeah. And I think another problem with him too is that he doesn't really have a pull-up game either. So, like, that's also, like, because he's so ball dominant, he has to, you know, it's either people, his opponents are like, okay, if we, you know, get him off the perimeter, he's going to try to go to the basket, or he's going to try to set up his teammates. If he's, you know, left on the perimeter, he's not, certainly not going to shoot. And if we kind of, you know, give him some space to, you know, kind of break us down in isolation, he's not really going to do that either. He's going to either play make for others, or, you know, move off ball so he can get to his shot, you know, at the rim. Off twos, he only shot 36%, and 50% off twos in general. So I think that's just another layer of his game. You know, he's certainly not a three-dimensional scorer, not even two-dimensional, I would say. But if he can, you know, get more attempts in his pull-up game, I think that will go a long way for him as well. With him too, I think, with him playing at UCLA, I think that's just another opportunity for him to, you know, he's playing in the Big Ten. He has potential to be Big Ten Player of the Year. Obviously, small sample size again, but I think with him, I think he's always been, you know, a Power Five type of player. It's just that with his, you know, size, he kind of gets overlooked. But, you know, if he was 6'6" and doing what he does, it'd be a whole different conversation. But that's just not how it is.
I mean, let's be real. If he was 6'6", he'd be a lottery pick, but that's not the world we live in.
That's not the world. But I think with him too, we've mentioned it, you know, he needs to show variety in his shot diet. He has to be willing to take more 3-point attempts, even getting into the pull-up game as well. I do like him in transition. I think with him too, I think a lot of his attempts for the 3-point can come from this because he is quick. He is always looking to, you know, hit ahead and hit his teammates. I think him spotting up from that, I think he'll get a really good opportunities to show that, you know, that's such a great shot to have, especially going into the NBA level that, you know, a lot of teams are expecting you to hit, right? Because those are kind of freebies. And if he is able to, you know, show that, I think that will boost his confidence. And I think that volume number will definitely get up to maybe 3 or 4 attempts per game, but definitely to the start of the year, it's not looking like that yet. But I think that's just him, you know, adapting to Big Ten play, playing with, you know, a whole new team, obviously Mick Cronin as a coach. So I think with him, I'm a Donovan Dent believer. I know a lot of us at No Ceilings are. I just want him to definitely just not rely on us play first as much, because I think he's already shown he can do that. It's this year, it's like, okay, I need to shoot more. I need to do more when the ball is not in my hands, right? So I think with him, it's just going to come down to, you know, is he going to, you know, let himself be uncomfortable in those situations, even though his team is relying on him to, you know, obviously be that ball dominant leader of the team.
This, I love this. You mentioned the transition 3-point shooting. Last year, he took 9 threes in transition. He made 7 of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, it's really funny because, you know, that's the small sample size of small sample sizes, right? But like, it does put, you know, other things into perspective that, oh, so he actually only shot 34% on threes in half court settings. That's, you know, not great, right? But, you know, again, it's a calculus with him. And there are some things where, you know, again, the question is less about, what's the right way of putting this? I'm worried that Jhené Mobley's at rim scoring might be a fatal flaw in terms of his draft profile because of everything else involved, right? With Dent, it's like the 3-point shooting is a problem and improving the volume would really help, but he does enough other stuff that it's not as much of a deal breaker as Mobley not finishing at the rim would be. And with that in mind, let's actually move into the defensive side of the discussion, because again, there's a lot more positive to say about Dent there than there is about Jhené Mobley. And, you know, I've mentioned Davion Mitchell. We've both mentioned Reed Sheppard. Donovan Dent is much closer to Davion Mitchell than Jhené Mobley. And, you know, the other thing about Dent that I think really shines through is, and this goes back to the athleticism stuff that you mentioned, and like, you know, transition numbers are easy for, you know, seeing how adept of an athlete someone is. Here, another one for me is guards you can block shots. Mm-hmm. Dent averaged almost a block a game last year as a 6'2 guard. And as you mentioned, as a 6'2 guard, that's maybe not quite all the way 6'2. And, you know, that's a really strong sign of athleticism, of, you know, being a guard who's blocking that many shots. You know, to me, that says, okay, guys are challenging you because they think you're too small, and you're emphatically showing them that you're not too small to get up there and change their shot. So, you know, that's a really nice indicator. That's, you know, obviously sort of the basic box score stuff. I mean, looking at the film as well, you know, it's something where, you mentioned the confidence. He's clearly quite confident in his defense as well. He's clearly quite confident that he can be that guy at the point of attack. And, yeah, you know, the turnover generation is a part of that, but it's not the whole story, right? You know, there has to be, and this is something that's also interesting to look at, of it's a really positive sign when someone who's a 20-point-a-game scorer at the college level is also putting in the defensive effort that he is. And it's even more of a thing when it's like defense is something where you're going to have to show that you can, you know, make up for the holes that you have on that end. And, you know, Dent has shown a lot of reasons to believe that, yeah, you know, I may be on the smaller side, but I can make up for it. I can more than make up for it athletically. And if the effort level is there, that's, you know, if you have the effort level and the athletic tools, it's a lot easier to make up for being 6'2" than if you don't.
Yeah. And that's so encouraging too, especially with, you know, he knows he's good at a lot of things, right? And he knows he's a leader on every team he's basically played for, right? And he knows he's so highly, you know, relied on that, you know, if he's not up to a certain standard, the whole team kind of, you know, falls apart, right? He is basically the glue to everything. And that's just like his persona and the aura he kind of gives off. And, you know, with him, you know, averaging, you know, a block per game as an undersized guard while, you know, having such a high, you know, usage rate, you know, he is the main driver playmaking wise. And, you know, he makes everything go. It's basically just, you know, it's an effort thing. And there's no doubt in my mind that he's not going to, you know, give effort in, you know, continuing, you know, the season with UCLA, you know, at the NBA level. I think he knows what he needs to work on. And I think he's at least trying to show different aspects of his game that, you know, already have questions about them. But I don't have a doubt that, you know, he's not going to, you know, at least try, right? Which I think is a huge thing, especially in an undersized guard like Dent.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that it seems so basic, but yet it's like, just try defensively. Like, yeah, it seems so stupid to say that out loud, but you know, and this is why I brought up the 20 point a game thing too, right? Of like, you know, just, this is something that I feel like I have to say way too often. Just be a human being for a second and think about like, hey, if I'm, you know, expending a ton of energy on one end of the floor and I got to run back and guard somebody, right? It's like, anybody who's ever played pickup, right? It's like, maybe I don't run inside the 3-point line this time. You know, maybe I just sit outside and chill for a minute. And as someone who was an actual athlete, unlike me, who stopped being an athlete in high school, you know, you have much more perspective on this than I do. But it's like, you know, the fact that someone who was a 20-point a game scorer, and you know, it's a bit different for a guy from Riverside to be playing at UCLA versus, you know, not quite playing at home in New Mexico. But even still, you know, that's a side point of the main point, which is, you know, people have talked about all the time of, you know, ex offensive superstar, right? Like, oh, James Harden doesn't put in the effort defensively, right? And it's like, well, you know, he's also playing 38 minutes a game and like 82 games a season, you know, prime James Harden. Even still, that's James like Harden
40 was, now almost.
Yeah. Well, I was talking about 5 years ago, but also fair point. But you know, the idea there being, there's a little bit more leeway that you have defensively if you're the alpha and the omega of the offense. And so for someone like Dent to be like, no, actually, I'm just going to keep going until I basically fall on the court. I mean, this is a guy who, you know, averaged 35 minutes a game last season, is averaging 35 and a half this season. For those of you who are NBA people only, college games are 40 minutes. He's playing basically the whole game. And, you know, when you add all of those things together, again, it's like thinking about the translation of this, I think, is the, you know, it's something that our colleague Nathan Grubel talks about all the time, and it's very important to talk about of, you know, be aware of the level that you're scouting for. And, you know, the flip side of that is, you know, as a prospect, be aware of where you need to be. You know, I've talked again and again about how much I love the developmental story of Deron Holmes' 3-point shooting, but, you know, the idea behind it being, okay, I've identified, you know, where my weaknesses are just generally. But, you know, also in terms of a, you know, more drilled down level, right? It's like Donovan Dent is probably not going to be a 20-point a game scorer at the NBA level. You know, I'm willing to bet that the odds of that are pretty slim. And so when you take that into account, the question is, okay, can you go from being this 20-point a game scorer, you know, leader of your team type to when I get my 2 5-minute shifts off the bench per game, what am I doing that, you know, tells the coach, hey, put me back out there next time too. And hey, maybe next time my second shift is 7 minutes instead of 5 minutes, right? You know, just that sort of very basic thing of where do I fill in gaps? And every time I see a prospect who appears who seems to clearly get that, it's a huge boost in terms of like, okay, you know, you're not just Jimmer Fredette, where it's like, I'm going to go where I can shoot enough to score 30 points a game. It's, I'm going to figure out where I need to adjust to be the kind of player who gets the opportunities to show what I can do, right? And that's, you know, again, we're talking about two combo point guard types who are probably going to be late second round picks. And if you're a late second round pick, you got to prove it real fast, because, you know, even compared to 3 years ago, NBA teams are churning through second round picks faster and faster and faster. And undrafted free agents are, you know, growing more and more in popularity, just purely in terms of the notion that, hey, you know, guys are trying to steer them rather than being the 51st pick. It's like, I'd rather be an undrafted free agent somewhere that I know I'm at least going to get to play, because if I don't get to play, you know, by relatively early on in year one, I might not be on the roster next year. Yeah. And so for someone like, for, you know, honestly, for both of these guards, but for Dent, I think in particular, because Jai Mobley's case is always going to be very one-sided of, am I good enough offensively to make up for it? With Dent, because he's got those defensive tools, I think it's even more important that, you know, he sort of takes this year as a showcase of, hey, I'm still that guy. Like, it doesn't, you know, whether I'm scoring 20 points a game or 3 points a game, I'm still going to be that guy defensively. That's a stronger case than just, okay, I've gotten to the point where I'm the man, so I don't really need to try defensively. And it's not that Jai Mobley doesn't try, to be entirely clear. It's just, it's, again, it's, there's a difference between 6'1 and uber athlete like Dent versus, you know, 6'1 and solid. I mean, certainly he's much better laterally. Really, I think with Mobley, it's more just verticality problem than anything else. But even still, that's something he has to make up for. And I'm optimistic about it because he's just such a spectacular shooter. But, you know, again, with Dent, it's a different case, right? It's not just, I'm going to come off the bench and be an elite microwave scorer. It's, there are a few different things that I can do. And so, you know, whatever team I end up on might want different things from me, but I can at least accomplish all of those things.
Yeah. And I think with Dent too, just to close this out, is that, you know, you mentioned he's only not playing 5 minutes per game while, you know, having a 35% assist rate. And he was like the top three in points produced at the college level. And that just shows the type of, you know, player he is that, you know, he doesn't even look gassed, honestly. Like, he is giving 100% effort, which is, it's so easy to be like, oh, like, all, you know, you look at all his numbers, oh, like, he does so many things, that's so hard to do. Like, I couldn't even imagine, you know, that type of effort, you know, day in, day in out. And with him too, you know, he doesn't have as much to prove than I think Mobley does. I think he obviously, you know, he's a senior, Mobley's a sophomore, right? But he definitely has a lot to gain. And I think with him, if, you know, if I was just going to, you know, say the Suns were on the board, obviously the Suns don't have a pick this year, but I think if I had a chance, you know, in the second round to pick, you know, Dent or Mobley, it'd be a pretty hard case for both. You know, obviously with the Suns, I think I would go Dent just because of his playmaking ability, and we don't really have a point guard. And but I think I just really like him as a prospect, and I really like love prospects and players, especially at the point guard position, that have that, you can just tell, like, they're a gritty type of player, and like, can, like, they're not afraid to grind, right? And I think that's who Dent is. So I'm excited to see him and obviously Mobley grow this year too as prospects.
Here's a funny, absurd set of numbers before we move on to the next section. Last year, as you mentioned, Donovan Dent led the Mountain West in points produced. He was third in the NCAA in points produced. He was also 13th in block percentage in the Mountain West.
Insane.
And with that, let's move on to our last section before we close things out. A Okay, just a couple of quick hits before we wrap things up. And this is actually a benefit for you, the listener, because of my internet outage yesterday. We're recording after a much better slate of games than we would have been yesterday. So there was quite a lot of fun around the college basketball world last night. Paige, what were your highlights from last night's games?
Yeah, so Michigan and Wake Forest played at LCA. I call it LCA, it's Little Caesars Arena. I'm from Michigan, so that's just like a shortened name that we call it. Super fun one. Michigan barely edged out Wake Forest in overtime. Mara looked awesome. I mean, his rim production, he was, you know, they couldn't do anything to stop him. I was at Michigan Pro Day about a month ago. I still have questions about, you know, his hands and, you know, the reliability of him underneath the basket, not as much as like a play finisher or lob threat, but he definitely showed a lot of potential in those areas last night, especially in the ACC challenge, which I don't really know why they do it so early. I mean, it's like the third game of the season. I would like, you know, a little bit more momentum leading up to it. But I was very happy with his play. Just a few stats. I know Metcalf was very happy with his performance yesterday. He had a huge double-double, 18 points, 14 rebounds, 6 assists. I mean, his playmaking ability was, I mean, he was doing a little bit of everything, which I had questions to coming in of, you know, if he can be, you know, this playmaking type of role. I think at UCLA, he wasn't really used in that sense. And I think May is kind of letting him, you know, do his thing a lot more and is utilizing him in that sense. So that was great to see. And he had 5 blocks as well. And then another big one, Louisville and Kentucky, obviously Mykel Brown went off, 29 points. He definitely is in that top 5 conversation for me. I think on my big board that we just submitted, I have him at 4. And Louisville got their first win over Kentucky in 5 years.
I think that says a lot more about Louisville than it does about anything else.
Yeah. And then Duke played Army at West Point to honor Coach K, which I think was awesome. I saw something that I don't know if it was like 20 years or something, but the last time a Power 5 school played actually at West Point. So I thought that was super cool, especially on Veterans Day. So that was a cool thing to note too. Florida State was a good one. Texas Tech, Illinois, JT Toppin, 35 points, 11 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals. I also thought Kylan Boswell, I think he's definitely a second round drifter for me, kind of in that sense of not Mobley, obviously, but more Donovan Dent-ish. Obviously, he's a lot more bulkier as an undersized point guard, which I kind of like more in terms of him on the defensive end. But I thought he played, I liked how he played yesterday against Texas Tech, obviously a top 15 matchup. And he's just a lot more physical than Denton Mobley are, which he showed off as well. A few more here. Let me see.
While you're looking, I want to circle back to JT Toppin. We talked last time about what else does Otega Owe have to do. JT Toppin is like the friggin' all NBA, like first team. What more does this guy have to do? And, you know, let's be real. He returned to college last year because they gave him a bag, right? And I have stated many times, and I will state many times again, that I am overjoyed that the NCAA criminal racket is no longer preventing players from actually being paid for their, you know, image and license and talent. But, you know, that aside, I mean, for the difficulty of second round evaluations that it causes of, if I'm not a first round pick, I'm going back to school. Like with JT Toppin, again, it's like he proved everything he needed to prove last year. And now he's just sort of, you know, on a victory lap getting, you know, $4 million or whatever it was from Texas Tech. But yeah, I mean, I've had him hovering first round, second round range for like 3 straight years now. And we're probably going to be in for yet another year of, okay, yeah, he's an undersized center, but man, does he rebound the hell out of the ball. And yeah, you know, it's just, man, is he an absolute athletic talent, and man, is he just demolishing everybody for yet another year. So shout out to you, JT Toppin. Shout out to you for getting the bag from Texas Tech to be once again the destroyer of college basketball.
Yeah, I mean, he's so fun to watch. Yeah. It seems like he's been in college forever, and it's kind of like, when am I gonna like turn on my TV and like he's in like an NBA jersey? Obviously this year he will be, but it's a long time coming for sure. And just as we're talking about Texas Tech, Christian Anderson, he didn't shoot very well, but he is just a presence and so efficient as a pick and roll creator, especially for Toppin and LaJuan Watts. And that's another guy that we love at No Ceilings. Obviously not the best performance for him, but to wrap things up, definitely a lot of great games yesterday. Obviously Cam Boozer had a nice game against Army as well.
All right, so that is going to do it for us today. Thank you all so much for tuning in. If you've been enjoying the show, please take the time to leave a rating and or a review wherever you get your podcast. That's always much appreciated on our end. You can find Paige on social media at PaigeOtto_. You can find me on Blue Sky at NBA Johnson. You can find No Ceilings at No Ceilings NBA, No Ceilings TV on YouTube, basically just No Ceilings NBA wherever you get your social media. And if you've been enjoying the deep dives portion of the show, feel free to reach out to us. You can reach out to me either via Blue Sky or email nickaj.nba@gmail.com. And as always, thanks so much for listening.